This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 11th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 181. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature. Hear from Vancouver Canucks team doctor Jim Bovard about how the coronavirus spread through the dressing room and put the team's National Hockey League season in doubt. And I welcome one of the world's top researchers in the quest to cure Parkinson's disease. Professor Bastian Bloom joins me from the Radboud University Medical Center in Nijmegen, Netherlands, to discuss why Parkinson's patients should be prioritized for the coronavirus vaccine. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or should the NPA become its own reality TV show? Vancouver's oldest civic political party, the Nonpartisan Association, did it again. Reporters and NPA members woke up on Easter Monday to learn that veteran Park Board Commissioner John Cooper had been anointed the party's candidate in the October 2022 civic elections. The board met before the long weekend to decide on Cooper. There was no vote of rank-and-file membership, which tends to dip in the years between elections. Predictably, three-quarters of the NPA Council caucus publicly disagreed with the closed-doors decision. Sarah Kirby-Young, Lisa Dominato, and Colleen Hardwick have all been pondering a run for the mayoralty. And that is where a reality TV show gets its juice. Because the City Council NPA caucus is female and liberal, the board of directors for the party is primarily male and conservative. John Cooper may be the right choice. He wanted the mayoralty nomination in 2018, but was undermined by Peter Armstrong and Chip Wilson's installation of the unknown Ken Sim, who fell almost 1,000 votes shy of winner Kennedy Stewart. The question is, will the way that Cooper was appointed be relevant to voters in 17 months, in a city that is worse than it was when Kennedy Stewart took over in fall 2018? What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, China's anti-gang campaign sucks billions from private entrepreneurs. At least 370,000 people were caught in China's nationwide campaign against gang crime over the last 3 years, but most of them cried foul and found the prosecution a confiscation of assets in disguise. Slogans urging citizens to resolutely root out black and evil forces have flooded cities and counties across the country since 2018. Officials recently announced that the courts have completed the legal proceedings of over 33,000 cases of organized crime and seized assets worth more than $83 billion, surpassing the total of the last decade. State media hailed the campaign as a huge success, but a lawyer familiar with anti-gang cases said many private entrepreneurs were convicted of gang-related charges by local governments to make up the numbers. In Taiwan news, Twitter includes Taiwan flag in announcement of Milk Tea Alliance emoji. The social media company noted that what had started out as a Twitter meme a year ago has blossomed into a global pro-democracy movement led by activists and concerned citizens in Hong Kong, Thailand, Taiwan, and Myanmar, with the territory and countries depicted with their respective flags. The Milk Tea Alliance hashtag now joins the social movements Me Too and Black Lives Matter as having a special emoji by the microblogging site. Twitter emphasized that at times of civil unrest and violent crackdowns, it is more important than ever for the public to have access to the open internet for real-time updates, credible information, and essential services. In stuff.co.nz, India unfairly targeted by New Zealand's temporary ban on arrivals, community leader says. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern announced that arrivals from India were being suspended between April 11th and 28th. The decision comes after 17 of 23 new cases of COVID-19 had arrived in New Zealand from India. India is also seeing its highest number of daily confirmed coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. Mandeep Bela, a coordinator of the Indian Workers Association in New Zealand, points out that the United States and Brazil have had more cases than India, and no change had been made to arrivals from there.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Salem Statesman Journal, police reform bills advance in Oregon House in rare show of bipartisanship. Republicans and Democrats unanimously approved almost a dozen bills on police reform, including regulating tear gas, requiring a publicly accessible database that names officers disciplined for misconduct, and limiting arbitrators' decisions on officers' misconduct cases. Governor Kate Brown congratulated the committee for pushing forward so many reforms in the wake of the death of George Floyd last May in Minneapolis. Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum said the package of bills can transform police work and how officers are perceived. An op-ed in the Seattle Times, justice delayed, COVID-19's staggering criminal case backlog. During the pandemic, King County's violent crime rate exploded to a rate not seen since the 1990s. Currently, the county has 225 pending murder cases, compared to last year at 140. There are 441 pending adult sexual assault, child sexual assault, and serious child abuse trials. If you add up robbery, assaults with a gun involving serious injury, domestic violence involving strangulation or other forms of assault, the cases total more than 3,000, more than twice the number of last year. And those are just the violent crimes. The total number of pending cases in King County is more than 7,000. When they send out a homicide case now, the typical defendant has been in jail for 2 to 3 years. The op-ed writer says, we need a 3-year plan to attack this criminal case backlog and ensure that diverting judges to priority criminal cases, which is required by law, does not close the court to those seeking justice in family matters, cases involving children, and redress for injury, business discrimination, or eviction. In Czech news, new charging stations in Parksville will electrify logging and transport trucks. EcoWest Driven says it's building charging stations for commercial trucks in Parksville. If successful, Mosaic plans to electrify its fleet of 300 logging trucks as part of its commitment to becoming carbon neutral by 2035. EcoWest Driven says it's awaiting 3 vehicles from Tesla for the pilot project. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. COVID exclusive, face of BC government pandemic battle called herself a private citizen. COVID exclusive, Ministry of Health staff felt betrayed by a lack of communication over headquarters infection memo. And answers demanded about Bill Yee's role as an advisor to Premier John Horgan. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It all started when Adam Gaudette was benched from practice on March 31st, and the following night's game against the Calgary Flames was postponed. Since then, 21 Vancouver Canucks players and 4 staff, including coaches, were added to the COVID-19 protocol list. Team doctor Jim Bovard told reporters on April 9th that many were infected with a variant of the coronavirus, but he does not yet know which one. Details are still sketchy, but Dr. Bovard said nobody was hospitalized and they're beginning to recover. It is not yet known when the team will resume the NHL season. Here is Canucks team doctor Jim Bovard.
We know that the individual had gone to a place within the guidelines, and that place subsequently was discovered to have cases of COVID, and that's how it got into our organization. And we've made it very clear within our group that there's no culprit here other than the COVID virus itself. Everybody's been working incredibly hard in the last year trying to avoid getting it, and in spite of their best efforts, this can happen. We're seeing that in the community. And what I'm seeing going on here in the organization is not much different than what I'm seeing in my own office with people in all walks of life, all workplaces. It just seems to be occurring in a much greater frequency within our group as well as within the community. I can speak absolutely emphatically to everybody out there. You do not want to get this virus. So do everything you can to not get this virus, not just for your sake, so that you're not potentially passing it on to others. I see this not just with the hockey players. I see this in my practice. And I see the concern it creates in individuals when they worry that they may have given it to their mother or their grandmother or someone else. So really, just stay abreast. You're seeing how this virus changes. The provincial authorities are following this closely. They're updating their recommendations. So stay up to date. Don't assume you know what the latest and proper precautions are. Just keep up with that. And, you know, but the basic ones haven't changed in an entire year. Physical distancing, wearing a mask in close quarters, and careful hand hygiene. Three basic things. And the fourth one is the idea that, you know, you don't go to work when you're sick. And to give, to drive that point home, it's like, you know, one of the players said to me, I was talking to him about that, you know, like the next generation of players are going to go, yeah, you went in when you were coughing and hacking and they say, yeah, you know, unless we were on, you know, really, really couldn't go. We played. It was a badge of honor. You went and played. And he said, it's sort of going to be to the next generation of hockey players, like the last generation that would smoke a cigarette between periods. It, you know, how ridiculous does that look now? It didn't look unreasonable back then. Everybody was smoking. Well, that's going to be one of the biggest differences, is that people have to be aware of infectious diseases and they have to be aware of their health. And that applies to everybody. You know, so if you're sick, stay home, isolate. Doesn't matter what you're sick with. Stay home and isolate. And in terms of COVID specifically, follow the measures, physical distancing, wear masks, careful hand hygiene.
Coincidentally, three restaurants owned by the Aquilini family, which also owns the Canucks, have also been hit with coronavirus closures by local public health authorities. In British Columbia, 200,000 people deemed clinically extremely vulnerable are on a priority list for the coronavirus vaccine. It's a long list for people who have had an organ transplant or cancer or severe breathing conditions or diabetes or heart disease or weakened immune systems. But it does not include people who have Parkinson's disease. There are 13,000 people in BC with Parkinson's, the degenerative disease that causes a loss of control of movements, body, and emotions. About 1 in 5 people with Parkinson's were diagnosed before they turned age 50. My brother Jonathan was diagnosed when he was just 36. He's among the 5 to 10% who developed the disease before they're 40 years old. My guest this week is Professor Bastian Blom. He's the medical director in the Department of Neurology and professor at Radboud University Medical Center in Nijmegen, Netherlands. Professor Blom's research in the Journal of Parkinson's Disease has looked at how coronavirus can affect people who live with Parkinson's. Why should people with Parkinson's get the vaccine as soon as they can? And why should public health authorities put people with Parkinson's on the priority list?
Well, they're both very good questions. I think there's sufficient research now to show that people with Parkinson's are not necessarily at a higher risk of developing the disease. They are at a high risk of developing the severe complications of a COVID infection. And that includes the respiratory complaints. Parkinson's is a very complex disease that also compromises your respiratory functions. So if you have COVID over and above, then you're at risk of having the severe complications. The motor and the non-motor symptoms worsen. There's good documented literature to show this. And in fact, people are at a increased risk of dying. Now that's not to say that this applies to all of Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a very heterogeneous disease, starting obviously with an early phase. All the literature suggests that the people who are most at risk are the people with more advanced stages of the disease. But given the fact that symptoms may worsen, the respiratory complaints are larger, that the risk of mortality is increased, I would like to see people with Parkinson's being prioritized. In my country, in the Netherlands, it's the same as in Canada. People are not on a priority list, and I regret that. So I think it is important for people with Parkinson's, A, to stay safe until they've received their vaccine, and we can talk about the consequences of that in a minute, and B, to accept the vaccine as soon as it's being offered to them. Don't worry, this is what our paper in the Journal of Parkinson's Disease is showing. Don't worry that the vaccine might worsen your disease. It won't. It won't interact with your disease process. And don't worry that the vaccine might interfere with the drugs that you're taking to suppress your Parkinson's symptoms. It is safe, or not more unsafe than it is for any other person on the planet. So please accept it when it's being offered to you.
For those people with Parkinson's who are waiting for the vaccine,
that are following the public health orders. They're continuing to stay home. They're staying out of the office. They're doing everything they can, wearing masks everywhere they go. There are risks of social isolation if they can't rejoin society faster, if they can't get the vaccine and get the peace of mind and get the ability to rejoin society like many people are who are getting vaccines. We're hearing news about the United Kingdom getting to herd immunity and starting to open up even further. What are your thoughts on, and what is the research on the effects of that social isolation, especially on people with Parkinson's?
Yeah, so Parkinson's is in many ways a rather unique condition because it's characterized by lack of dopamine in the brain. And brain is the chemical that you need to move well. It's also the chemical that you need to handle stress. So people with Parkinson's are unusually susceptible to stress. So this chronic stress that we're all experiencing, I'm feeling it, this, you know, this enduring uncertainty about how the COVID crisis might evolve, whether you might become infected or not, is particularly deleterious for people with Parkinson's. So advice number one would be try to manage that to the best of your abilities. For example, using yoga or mindfulness. And there are now remote interventions, remote mindfulness programs or remote yoga programs to try and suppress and alleviate the stress. The second thing is don't try to fight this alone. Try to reach out to your physician or to your Parkinson's nurse. If you can't pay a personal visit to the hospital, why not try a remote visit, either through a video consultation or simply using a phone? But don't try to fight this alone. And my third piece of advice would be try and stay physically active, even if it is within the realms of your own house. And I realize there may be people with small homes, and it may sound easier than it is, but we know that physical exercise is a treatment, a symptomatic treatment for people with Parkinson's. It suppresses the motor symptoms. It alleviates a lot of the non-motor symptoms like constipation. It improves your sleep. So people now grounded at home are also losing out on their workout, which makes things even worse. So if you have the opportunity, try to do a workout, if not anywhere else, in your house. But in all fairness, the risk of becoming infected outdoors is very, very limited. So if you keep your social distancing, if you wear a mask, go outside and get your exercise. I don't think it's necessary to stay completely confined to your house, but make sure that you keep your social distancing and remain physically active. That is crucial.
Here in Canada, we're experiencing a supply shortage so much that the public health authorities, federal public health authorities in Immunization Canada have decided that the interval between doses can be up to 4 months. Manufacturers have generally recommended for Pfizer or Moderna about 3 to 4 weeks. And this isn't happening in the United States because they have quite a supply in the supply chain. Americans are getting vaccinated at a speed greater than Canadians. But here in Canada, the wait can be up to 4 months, which also adds to the pressure of people with Parkinson's or other conditions, even those that are on the clinically extremely vulnerable list. What are your thoughts on this elongated delay of second doses and what it might mean, especially now that variants are spreading to the degree they are?
Well, my disclosure, of course, is that I'm a neurologist. I'm not a virologist. So all I can say is what I'm reading in the literature. From what it seems is that the first vaccine already offers quite a significant protection. And I know that there is some debate as to whether a longer interval is perhaps acceptable. I would think that if people are being offered the first vaccine, take it, even if it's AstraZeneca. You know, there are concerns about thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. We feel in the Netherlands, the experts feel that that risk is very, very, very low, that the risks of COVID are much higher. So if you are being offered a vaccine, even if it's AstraZeneca, please accept it. If there is a longer delay, that may not be ideal. I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think it is important to know that whether you've been vaccinated once or twice, you still need to maintain your safety precautions because it's not an absolute protection. It helps to protect you a little bit, or more than a little bit. It helps to protect the community, but it's not a full protection. So please keep wearing your mask and maintain your social distancing.
For further risk, elaborated in the report in The Lancet from researchers at Oxford, that one in three COVID-19 survivors that they found were eventually diagnosed with a brain or psychiatric disorder within 6 months of catching the virus. Anxiety and mood disorders were most common. That, of course, piled on top of Parkinson's, just only causes more problems. But even for those who are healthy, to look ahead at that, that risk of anxiety, mood disorders, or even worse. Have you read this research, and what are your thoughts on this risk?
No, I have not seen that paper. What I do know is that COVID, beyond the infection itself, has two complications. So one is this chronic stress that we talked about earlier, which is particularly deleterious to people with Parkinson's. It worsens their symptoms. And there are concerns, although there is no evidence, that the chronic stress may hasten the progression of Parkinson's. So fighting that chronic stress component is critical. The other thing that is a particular concern about becoming infected is that the virus is neurotropic. And just like some other viruses, including the influenza virus, the common flu, those viruses, including corona, seem to have some sort of predilection, some preference for the basal ganglia, which is the areas involved in causing Parkinson's. So that's all the more reason to try and mitigate the risk of becoming infected to the best of your abilities.
That was my guest, Professor Bastian Bloom, one of the top researchers of Parkinson's disease. He's the medical director in the Department of Neurology and Professor at Radboud University Medical Center in Nijmegen, Netherlands. I asked BC NDP Minister of Health Adrian Dix for an interview. I wanted to ask Minister Dix why Parkinson's patients are not prioritized for the coronavirus vaccine in BC, but Minister Dix did not respond.
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to people in British Columbia who are living with Parkinson's disease and the people in British Columbia who are trying to make their lives better. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month. Michael J. Fox is the most famous British Columbian with Parkinson's disease. Go to michaeljfox.org to learn more about what he is doing to find a cure and for how you can help. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 11th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on April 11th in 1979, Ugandan dictator Idi Amin was ousted from power? He fled to Libya, then Iraq, and eventually settled in Saudi Arabia to live in exile. Up to 500,000 people were killed under Idi Amin's regime. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter, and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.